for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 325 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a special one where we do something I've never done before, and that is to interview two different groups about the same project, and that's Flavor coming from Image Comics. First up, I talk with Joe Keating, the writer and co-creator, and a culinary consultant, Ali Buzari. We talk about some of the background of the story as well as the food aspects of it. So we have a good time talking about all those good things that are involved in Flavor. Then the second part, we get to the art team. And that includes Wook-Jin Clark and Tamara Bonvillain. Wook-Jin is the artist and Tamara is the colorist. And we get into the different aspects of their work and how they made this book to be such a great book that I really loved. One of the things in the release that I really enjoy, it says, prepare your palate for the high-stakes competition of the Hunger Games, steeped in the enticingly lush world-building of Miyazaki. So prepare yourself to get involved in Flavor, a terrific book from Image coming out in mid-May. The final order cutoff deadline for retailers is Monday, April 23rd, so be sure to let your comic store know about that. There's a lot to get to in this special episode, so let's get to it. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Joe Keating, creator of such good things. Oh man, just so many, it's hard to read the list here. It's, let's see, you've got...
I did an issue of Marvel Adventures.
Okay, well that's...
And,
that's a place to start.
Backup stories, I don't know.
You got Evolution, you got Shudder, you got Ringside, you got Glory, and the one that I initially got a hold of your writings was Tech Jacket.
And oh, stuff. Nice.
So all those kind of good things are in there. And Joe, of course, you got Flavor, which we're going to talk about, which is good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we also have with us Ali Buzari, a food scientist, among other things. I feel honored in his presence, to be honest. How you doing today, sure. Ali?
I feel honored to be in the presence of your incredibly bassy voice.
Oh, people say I always sound like Casey Kasem, and I don't hear it, but I'm on the other side. It's going bouncing around in my head, so I never get it. Now, Ali, I've got to start with you because in the description of Flavor number one, it says you're a renowned food scientist and author of the IACP award-winning cookbook, Ingredient Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food, which, you know, wow, I have never heard a comic that had a consultant involved with it. So I got to ask you, as a renowned food scientist, how did you get involved in making a comic book happen?
It may make Joe a little weepy, but Shudder is actually the reason that I enjoy comics. One of my best friends is Corey Hart from Image. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, she introduced me to a slew of different amazing authors and amazing books. And it was this moment of reckoning of like, wow, this is an amazing way to convey information visually that I was completely out of touch with. And there is a specific panel in Shudder that I have the original ink on my wall. That is like the panel where I was like, oh yeah, this is how I want to talk about food, because I'm like a hybrid chef and biochemist. So a lot of what I do is writing and doing R&D and teaching people about how food works on the like nitty gritty level. Mm-hmm. And conveying information and conveying metaphor and explaining science in layman's term, mm-hmm, is so much easier to do through the comic methodology, I guess, to put it that way. Mm-hmm. So I met Joe, I met him through Corey, and I told him I was a fan of his, and I said, let me cook you breakfast. And so he was in San Francisco for an event. And so I made him some potatoes, which incidentally I got a PhD in mashed potatoes. And he apparently was down with it. And I heard a couple years later that this book was going to happen. And honestly, the thing that I thought of first, like, you're right, I have not heard of another book where there's somebody from my background who's consulting on it. Mm-hmm. But it did remind me of the NBC Hannibal show. Mm-hmm. Where one of my favorite chefs, Jose Andres, was actually brought on to be like the visual styling consultant for all the people food on that show. Yeah. So it was like they got like a fine dining chef to come in and make Hannibal's gourmet human meals look convincing. So it felt kind of a spiritual piece with that.
Wow. How about that? Right. Now, of course, Joe, I got to ask you. I mean, we'll get to some of the insight, but I've just got to read the description in the Image Comics website. It says, within a strange walled city, an unlicensed chef discovers a mystery that threatens to end it all. Mm-hmm. Where chefs are the ultimate celebrity and food is the most valued commodity. The high-stakes competition of Hunger Games collides with the lush Miyazaki-esque world building in this delectable new ongoing series. So talk to me, Joe, about, because I always, when I read your stuff, you take us where no comic has gone before, is the way I like to describe it.
You've done wrestling,
you've done the superheroes, and yet you've also done like a Glory, which is a very different kind of comic. Talk about where flavor fits in your desire to communicate comics.
Well, I mean, it's like Ali said, Corey was really like a patron saint of this book, in that like us meeting directly led to me, because slight tangent, but it'll make sense. My favorite thing about Jack Kirby is not so much his art, which is amazing, or his creations, which are the best, but the way he talked about comics, the way he talked about it being a series of evolvement, and how he was always interested in asking questions, not necessarily answers, and where comics could go and the potential of that. And when I met Ali and then later on read his book Ingredient, I just felt like, oh, this guy talks about food the way Kirby talks about comics. And that like just got me thinking in terms of how the two mediums, call food a medium, interact with each other, and how, you know, the favorite meals I've made have been out of collaboration. And, you know, that's my favorite aspect about making comic books is the collaboration of it. And so the idea percolated in the back of my brain, and I can't remember who I ran it by first, but at the same time, I feel like I ran it by Corey, Eric Stevenson, Wookjin, and Allie, like maybe the same. And I thought it was the stupidest thing I ever came up with, but then it just felt like everything, it just percolates more and more and more, and the reaction seemed pretty good. So that was how Flavor was born. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, when it comes to all my stuff being different, you know, the best advice I ever got about comics was write what you want to read. And it's like, well, I don't want to write stuff that already exists because I can just go read that. And, you know, my hope with my career is I can have a body of work that has everything is totally different from the other. Mm-hmm. But so we're Flavor is just kind of the next thing I want to read. And luckily I was able to assemble this team with Allie and Wookjin and Tamara Bonvellin and Ariana Marr, colorist and letter respectively, and of course working with Image again. You know, yeah, I don't know. It's just where I'm at these days.
Oh, well, cool. I mean, I like it. I've read superhero comics for decades, and I've probably read every superhero story it's ever been, although one of them comes along and surprises me every once in a while. But to read this book is a very different experience, and I had a chance to read the first issue, which I really liked.
That was good, thank you.
Yeah, of course, I like all your stuff, to be frank. I always enjoy it. So I went in knowing I was going to like it because it's really terrific stuff. It's lots of action. I've got to start right off with the first page, and I got to ask you a question. It looks like it's a double-page spread.
It is.
Is that going to be on the inside cover and then the first page, or how is that going to work?
Yeah, with all my comics since Shudder number one, I think, somewhere around there, I started writing on the inside front cover. Uh-huh. which is something either Eric Stevenson or Brandon Graham were talking about it. Like, oh, why can't we just do this? And I was like, yeah, I liked it because it immediately immerses you into the comic. There's no, like, ad for, you know, fruit pies or, like, credits. It's just, like, there's comic book. You're in it. You can't turn back now. You know, there's, like, no, like, not exactly the same thing, but, like, that's why on Amazon they started the one-click thing, because they figured out, like, if you have to do more than one click on something, you can easily turn away and not purchase the item. And for me, it's not exactly the same thing, but there's not that block in your storytelling when you start reading something that starts on the inside front cover. So, yeah, all my stuff starts on the inside front cover. So if you read it digitally, I guess it just looks like it starts off with a double page spread or, you know, some cases, like, especially like Ringside, it'll just look like another page or digitally. But, and I don't know. It's just with the construction of a comic book, I always think about the spreads and the page turns and stuff like that and how that all interacts. And by starting the IFC, you can kind of start that from the get-go. You don't have something that's possibly blocking the reader's experience of the comic book.
Now, what you started out with reminded me very much of a Nancy Drew book I picked up one time. I picked up this book, and it said the first sentence was, she couldn't believe the car was headed straight for her. And 30 pages later, I went, wait a minute. I've been reading this book because that first thing just grabbed me and flung me in because of all that crazy stuff. Now, yours starts off with an action thing, and it's a wonderful sentence. I don't know if it's good. Would it spoil something to say what it is?
No, follow that truffle.
Yeah, follow that truffle. I love that. And there's the main character and his dog riding through the town, and he's yelling, follow that truffle.
Yeah, Shoe and her dog. Yeah.
So it's Shoe. That was another question I had for you. How do you pronounce it? It's spelled X-O-O, and I thought it might be Zoo, but I thought that probably wouldn't work. It's Shoe. Okay, Shoe. And the dog, of course, is Buster, who is quite hilarious. I get such a kick out of him. Good. He's kind of a...
my actual dog, but you can probably hear barking in the background.
Oh, there you go. That's
Buster. Right on cue. That was amazing.
Yeah,
that
was, well, he's smart. Good job. That's my dog.
I was going to go back to Allie for a second and talk to you, because one of the things that it mentions in here is that you're going to provide bonus content. What kind of bonus content are you going to provide? Is it going to be like an extra thing at the end of the book? Allie, how's this going to work?
I'm basically up on hand for whatever these guys come up with. My role has been such a fun one where I'm kind of just planting seeds. I talk a lot. Rather than talking about recipes or here's the secret to the best chocolate chip cookie or whatever, I talk and write about the fundamental, almost like cosmic patterns, the same repeating things that link all food, like the same thing that makes coffee really good is actually one of the same things that makes a baguette really good is one of the same things that makes roast chicken really good. And so at the start of this whole project, I got to get together with the flavor team and like lay out the ground rules for how food works in our universe. And I offer up a couple of ideas of where something could be a springboard into Shoe's universe and the universe of flavor. And then there's just a lot of stuff about how food works that seems kind of fantastical already. So it'll probably be some peeks behind the curtain of that.
Okay.
I don't know, Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Yeah, that, like, there's been a lot of little things too that, I mean, not so much with the back matter, but there's this one scene where there was a family eating dinner together. And it was like a character who we're just introducing. And I really wanted something specific to convey. I mean, I can't really get into too much because it's not a character you meet in the first issue. But specifically about their relationship with each other and about their class and everything like that. So I was talking to Allie. I was just like, hey, look, this is the situation I have. What do you think they should be eating? And what would actually make the most sense? And we talked through a few different options and then landed on what we landed on. So stuff like that, I don't know, just to make it more, I don't know, I guess real. And like Allie was saying, like, food itself is so fantastical. Like, I really can't stress enough, like, whether or not people buy this comic, they really should buy his book, Ingredient, as well. seriously, it's like my guide with everything. I have a shelf of stuff that's like kind of a useful reference for this book, and that's the one I go to the most.
Well, Joe, I can tell that you really like the cooking concept, because there's a sequence in the very first book when somebody asks Shu what his role is there. And he responds the same one he's always had. And then you get like a full page And it's actually the beginning of the credits, and he says two words.
She says, yeah.
Oh, she says, yeah, I cook.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a huge kick out. And the way that the image is done, and I'll talk with them later about this in the next half, but I really enjoyed the way that she does this stuff and she looks. Mm-hmm. And right there, that whole full-page thing really leaped out at me, and I thought, this is like the exclamation point of the first issue. Communicate, this is the main thing that's going on in here, is the cooking part. And I always get a kick. There's mm-hmm. an uncle who's involved, and Shu has a very specific role for him right at the beginning, which I got a kick mm-hmm. out of and stuff. Mm-hmm. So very good stuff. I really enjoyed. I really liked the characterizations, but you always do a good job with characterization too, I think. They breathe so much to me. There's an older lady that's part of the family that shows up in the beginning, and I could hear her voice the way that it was mm-hmm. written. You know, she just really, really sparkled. I thought mm-hmm. was really fun. Brought in the uncle and all those good things were done. Now, mm-hmm. I got to ask one thing, Joe, about the uncle comes and he brings basically one thing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks, and she says, is that a sword? She goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of curious. Yeah. At this point, I get a little bit of an anime feel to it and stuff. Was that yeah. part of what you were trying to communicate with that?
What was I trying to communicate? If it was anime influence?
Were you trying to bring a little anime feel into it?
I don't know about anime in specific. No, it's just more so like a character aspect of him that we'll get into later.
Okay.
I mean, I will say that just one of the biggest influences on my creative life, much less this book, is Hayao Miyazaki and his work in general. But that specific moment, I don't know. I just, dude's got a giant sword. We don't know why. later. You know?
There's another wonderful sequence that I got a huge kick out of is when the dog has got a wig on. And I don't know if I want to spoil that too much, but let's just say they try to make it out like as if this is a person speaking. And right. I got a huge kick out of that. I thought that was a – see, one of the things I think that you do particularly well is balance drama with humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was a particularly funny part. You know, you look up and the uncle and the woman are coming, and they look up and see things up there. And, you know, I hate to keep spoiling the dialogue, but it's so much fun. The uncle mm-hmm. says something and says, "Now that's one mouthy dog." And I had to laugh out loud when I read that.
Oh, good.
That's such good stuff. I mean, the balance of those kinds of things, to me, is one of the strengths of your book. And I think it adds a lot of, you know, I hate to do this, but it adds a lot of flavor to the book.
Hey.
Yeah, you know, hey, it was a low-hanging fruit there for a second that I had to grab. But, the people are all great. They don't necessarily all get along, which is another thing I really like. They have little disagreements and things like that, which I like. And... Mm-hmm. You know, I just thought that it's such a great book in that sense, and that, you know, if you like characterization, if you like strong female characters, if you like these kinds of interesting interactions, and especially in a different place for comics, in the cooking arena, I think that this book is going to really shine amongst people.
Well, that's good. I sure hope so.
No, let me talk to Allie a little bit about this, because you were probably sure. involved from the beginning as far as the characters and things like that go.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if the characters in any way, you know, how much influence does the juror input have on the characters as far as how they acted and what kind of things they did?
It's a perfect question, actually, for the arc of how our relationship has gone.
Mm-hmm.
When I started just talking to Joe, and at that point it was just him and Wuchin, about building the world, I thought that was really all that I could help with.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say, let me help you construct the physics and the food trends and the flavor profiles of this world. And then from there, you guys who are the storytellers go on and tell the story. And the example that Joe alluded to before that I won't dig into for the sake of spoilers in terms of specifics, but there's this family meal where the members of this family are going to be eating. And the whole point was, it's this very intact scene. How do you convey like contextual clues about the personalities of each of these people based on how they're interacting with the food?
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was mind blowing, because there's so many things. Again, I always think back to like Shudder, what Joe and Layla were doing in terms of like what people were wearing and how they were doing their hair. It really was, that is one of the reference comics in my mind for how to non-verbally characterize characters. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I realized was, oh my God, I profile people watching them cook and eat like all the time, just subconsciously. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who has a saying that you can tell whether a chef could ever work in a Michelin-starred restaurant by the way he or she puts their knife down on a cutting board. Hmm. There's so many things you can pick up, and like that is obviously a very like dorm room philosophy kind of statement. Mm-hmm. But there's so much in how we interact with food, because it ties into all of your senses. It ties into your cultural background, your current state of being, how healthy you are, how good you feel about yourself. It really is this nexus of everything that's going on. And so just something as simple as if you're making if you're at a taco bar and you're making a taco, whether or not you overload that taco to the point where all the fillings are just spilling out and you're like, whatever, I'm going to deal with it, versus being really self-conscious about if one piece of tomatillo is askew and not wanting to get anything on your really nice shirt, that already, I mean, you could have like a FBI profiler figure you out from that. And so I didn't think that anything that we would talk about on the food side would have that much to do with characterization versus just world building. But that was kind of the magic of Joe and this team, is they are good enough at all of the fundamentals of building a world that there was this luxury of extending the food story beyond just this is a world where chefs are ninjas to this is a world where, just like our world, the way you interact with food defines you. And this is one of the first comics I've ever been aware of to use that as a major lever for characterizing the major players.
Because, there's a show on called Blue Bloods that has, at the end of every episode, or at least somewhere in the episode, they will have a family dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Which, is something almost extinct. Most people eat on the run all the time. Nobody sits around and talks and eats like that. And so that's interesting, because that really speaks to me on that level about that. And there's other things about food, because like we've lost some of who we are because we don't sit and talk to each other around the food table, in my mind. Mm-hmm. So I think, are you going to deal with some of that as the book progresses? Is that going to happen?
Not that specifically that I can think of, but I mean, we'll continue to show characterization through food and through food preparation. Like that's always going to be a big part of the book. So,
wow.
Yeah, we'll keep reading, True Believer.
Well, no, I one of the things I want to ask you, Joe, is about there are soldiers who apparently are automatons or robots of some sort. There's no...
No, they're people.
Well, they're people, really, because the way they speak sometimes sounds almost robotic.
That's purposeful. Not so much robotic, but yeah.
So, because when I looked at it, we don't see their face. That's the one thing you do. And right away, that made me wonder. I started, of course, my sci-fi mind started to say, ooh, science fiction, robots, and stuff like that. But how do they see through their helmets and stuff? I don't know whether you figured that technical part out, but as a sci-fi person, that drives me nuts when I can't see someone's face. I want to know how in the world do they function.
Well, I mean, the part about not being able to see their face, not being able to see their humanity was a methodical part of that design. And to sort of differentiate them from, someone and someone you like, how do you really know somebody? You have to like look at them and be with them and see how they actually interact. And, the idea of hiding who they are creates this otherness to them that actually does play a role.
Okay.
In terms of the science, it's like, who maintains the Batmobile? I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, I I'm a sci-fi guy.
A lot of with Shudder, we had a lot of people like, why are there Minotaurs? And I'm like, because there are. It doesn't matter. It's just not. It doesn't matter.
The Minotaur guy in the pinstripe suit on the subway train, was the panel.
Mm. Oh, so you have that specifically?
Yeah, no, like truly, that was the thing. That was like, why are there Minotaurs? I don't know, but it felt, if you heightened in New York City, to as high as it could go. All of these people that we like charmingly are like, oh, what a creature. They're literally creatures in Shudder. And I was like, oh, yeah, all right, I'm in. There was so much that was conveyed just by that one choice.
I have to always tell the story of Jonathan Frakes, who was in Star Trek Next Generation. He was at a convention, and some younger person stood up and said, I need to know how the warp drive works. I can't understand it, because in this case, this should be doing this, and this should be doing that. And at that point, he began to sing Volare very loudly. And in other words, he don't know and he don't care. And then he moved on to the next person to ask the question.
What's the important bit? Is the important bit explaining why they're minotaurs or something like that? Or, you know, but then again, you know, with flavor, it's like it was really important to me that we have reasoning behind all the food stuff and get the food stuff right because of what you can do with that and characterization. Because the characterization, that's important, you know. So, yeah.
Well, now I've got to ask Allie. I got to ask Allie a question, because there's a part in the early part of the book in which Shu gets hit with some peppers.
Yeah.
Are those real peppers? I mean, I was kind of – at first I thought, well, maybe Joe made them up. But now I have to question, is this something that's real?
That was the funny thing is there's so much stuff that is real that really all you need to do is just like give it a cool name and it seems like fantasy. Mm-hmm. That was just one – this is a perfect example where we talked about one concept in our world, which is when you feel like hot chili burn in your mouth, mm-hmm. that is actually – it has nothing to do with taste. Those are corrupted pain nerves in your mouth that – over eons, the chili pepper plant evolved a certain chemical that would make us think our mouths were in pain. Hmm. Like, that's the crazy – I don't know if this is just me being, like, the son of immigrants, but we had chickens growing up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but chickens love, like, serrano and jalapeno chili seeds. Mm-hmm. It's, like, their favorite thing. And they'll eat, like, enough – hot spicy chili seeds, like the hottest part of the plant, they'll eat enough of it to make you pass out, and they're like, eh, it's nothing. And there is this crazy relationship between chicken and chili pepper, where since chickens don't have teeth, the chili pepper never evolved a reason to protect its seeds, because they'll just eat it and then they'll disperse it. Whereas we, and like mammals, dogs and cows and whatever, will chew up and destroy the seeds, so the plant doesn't get to proliferate, doesn't get to get to the next generation. So it's this crazy thing where the arc of evolution where a jalapeno developed a chemical FU to tell our senses, to corrupt our nerves and our mouths, mm-hmm. it weaponized itself. And I explained that to like Joe and Wook-Jin. They're like, oh, okay, cool. This is actually going to be a weapon in Shu's world. Mm-hmm. So it's I think that's like the definition of fantastical realism.
Hmm. That's interesting, because it really surprised me, you know, because I literally didn't know whether it was real or not. I'm so fascinated to see how this interaction between the two of you and making the story go like that. I love something that's different like that, and this is very unique in comic storytelling, so I really like that.
It's a lot of fun.
Now, related to that, I've got to ask about, and I don't know, I never know if I can pronounce anything right, Niv, the person who is involved mm-hmm. in that?
Niv, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Niv, okay, because he is, I can't spoil things, but let's just say that he's a character we should pay attention to in the first book. And I just was, he's a very interesting person. He has obviously has an adversarial relationship with Shu, but more than that, something is revealed about the world as a result of Niv. And so I have to ask about, did you set him up this way, that he was sort of adversarial? And then let's just say that we kind of feel sorry for him at some point.
Well, you know, one thing I always try to do going back to Glory is I don't like writing just based, like, villains. Like, this person's evil or this person's that or whatever. Like, you know, I think the best comic character, if not one of the greatest characters in human literature, is Dr. Doom. And I think one of the big part about Dr. Doom is that, like, I mean, yeah, he does some pretty, you know, but he's not coming from, like, I'm a villain. He's like, look, I'm just trying to fix everything. Even though the way he fixes everything is pretty messed up. Like, so there's all these, it's not just the black and white, oh, I want to conquer Earth because whatever stupid reason. And so whenever I try to write adversarial characters, even if they do evil things, I try to, you know, work in not just, you know, reasoning behind what they do, but yeah, you want to have empathy for them because it makes it a real person as opposed to, you know, like I've done things in my life and, you know, I think everyone has that you regret or you wish you did differently or whatever. And, you know, one person's best friend is another person's enemy, you know? So, yeah, I mean, that's conscious just in general to, you know, humanize the characters a bit and flesh them out. So it's not just, oh, that guy stinks. He's a jerk, you know, you know, have something real happen to him. So
very cool. Now, one of the things I got to ask, too, is that when we get to, I mentioned the fact that the beginning of the credits starts on that big page. And the names of the people involved start to appear over the next couple of pages. And I got a kick out of that. The name of the book doesn't appear until the last page, which, as I asked about with the first one, I guess the last page is going to have the same thing. It's going to spread across the last page into the back page. So if, because I really like that, it gives it a real dramatic punch to see something that's a double page spread like that. And so to me, it ends really well, and I'd never spoil it because it's got me, you know, teased for the second books really strongly. So I really can't wait to see what's going to happen with that. But I really like that. So is this something you're going to do regularly within Flavor, or might you shake that up a little here and there?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, you don't want to do the same thing over and over and over again. You know, I mean, I always do start the double on the inside front cover, but what I do there, or what we do, you know, with the last page, which I generally, do a, you know, just a splash page, as opposed to a double page spread. But, you know, I just love utilizing the mechanics of comics. And, you know, again, Flavor was born out of thinking about how the mechanics of comics and mechanics of food could interact or whatever, in terms of, like, we're talking about characterization or storytelling or whatever. So, yeah, you know, you never want to do the same thing twice in a row, or if you are going to do it, then figure out a new take on it or whatever. So, you know, yeah, of course there'll be other double page spreads, but how and why and what, like, I don't know. It's always, every issue is kind of like its own game in a way in terms of structure. And that's one of my other favorite aspects of writing comics in specific, is viewing the whole thing as a unit and what you can do and how you can convey certain things in different ways than what you normally see. So, always something new. At least that's the goal.
That's good, because, you know, I like, as I've said, I've read books for decades, and when I run into something that's a repetitive thing that I've already read, then I'm kind of like, I get bored. Right away. I'm never bored with your stuff. I'm always wondering what you're going to do next.
Thank you, sir.
So it's called Flavor, and the first issue is coming out on May 16th, and it's going to be a great book, $3.99 cover price. And the interesting thing, this is not a miniseries, according to this. This is an ongoing.
Correct. Book. So, that's the hope.
So, So you've got lots.
Yeah, I mean, all my ongoings have endings, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not a guy who wants to write the same book forever. Yeah. Like, Shudder was 30 issues, and Ringside was planned and was, or is 15 issues. You know, I know what this is. I don't want to say just yet, but I know what this is aiming for. But yeah, I mean, essentially, it's an ongoing with an ending, which is kind of
well. You know, how do you know where? You know, you can tell when a writer knows where they're going. If you're just wandering around, it's like driving in a car and just going out and driving everywhere. You have nowhere to. You're never going to get anywhere. But with your writing, you always have a place you're heading to, and I always like that. It makes me feel that I can trust where you're going. So if something doesn't quite jive in my head right away, I say, okay, he knows what he's doing, so I can keep going.
So, that means a lot. Seriously, thank you.
It's just a terrific book. The first book really got me. I can't wait to see future ones. And, Allie, your contributions obviously are going to make this book a really something unique and different and something I'm going to look forward to, because I love to eat, I'm sorry to say. And, you know, for me, I'm going to learn a lot about food and how things interact with us like that. So I think your contributions are going to be real strong in this book.
It's definitely going to make it weirder. And I don't know why you would need to be sorry to say that you love to eat. I mean, that should be a badge of honor.
Sometimes I love too much to eat, and so I have to be careful on that. I can't eat too much. I've got to be careful about that. But I'm still going to learn about lots of good things about this. Joe, it's a wonderful story. I can't see where we're going from here. And that always excites me when I can't tell where we're heading. And, Allie, I can't wait to see what kind of stuff you're going to do in the book as far as, like, contributions, as far as bonus content and stuff. I'm not quite sure what that means, but I'm going to be curious to see what happens.
It'll be a blast.
people need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And now we continue the flavor special here by talking with two of the art creators. And we start with Wookjin Clark, who has done work for Adventure Time, Regular Show, and other things, and have your own creator-owned work as well. So you've got a lot of work in the comics there, Wookjin. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
That's good to talk with you. And then we got Tamara Baumvillain, who has, according to Comic Vine, done 290 comics. Wow. That's great. And this includes Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Wayward, Doom Patrol, Uncanny Avengers. How are you doing today, Tamara?
I'm good.
Good, good. Well, why don't we start with you, Wookjin, and talk about the book. We talked about what the series is about some, but what was it about Flavor that attracted you to do the book? And co-create, too. You're a co-creator. Got to make sure we get that in there.
Yeah. Joe and I have been friends for a while, and he threw, like, we were talking ideas out, and he had mentioned a cooking comic, and I'm always up for different things and different challenges. Because I feel, you know, being stagnant, you don't grow at all. And I think I was finishing up a lot of license work, and I was just, like, kind of getting the itch to go back to creator-owned stuff. And then it kind of just all fell into place to throw ideas around, and then just kind of turned into what Flavor is now.
Which is great. Now, as a co-creator, of course, that must be fun, too, because if you've worked on Adventure Time and stuff, which you have to be probably very rigid about what you're doing, it's nice, to, as you were saying, to go and do something a little freer, probably, as far as the art goes.
Oh, for sure. It's nice when, like, it was fun to work on those projects, but it's also, it's nice when you get to come up with your own stuff and not kind of just have something to go off of. Mm-hmm. It puts a little bit more of the ball in my court, so to speak, and I can kind of just cut loose. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Now, Tamara, how about you? How did you get involved in the process?
Well, Joe contacted me. Hadn't worked with him before, but I'd met him somewhat recently. And I know him through, like, he's done a book with Nick Barber, Ringside. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, like, had that connection to him there. Mm-hmm. And I guess how he ended up seeing my colors. But, yeah, he just contacted me and asked me to, like, join the project.
Okay, cool. Well, did he say what it was about your colors that he liked?
I don't know. It always feels weird to, like, compliment yourself like that. But, yeah, I don't know. He seemed to enjoy it. Like, I've worked on Wayward. I think he saw that and probably other things. The stuff he mentioned, like Moon Girl, Doom Patrol kind of things.
Okay, well, very good. Very good. Now, Wookjin, let's talk about the individual characters. You got Shu, Buster the Dog, and things like that. I mean, as far as giving these people life and giving them, you know, appearances, did you draw on your imagination? Did you pattern them after real people? How did you do that? I mean, did it vary? How did you do it?
I think we were pretty open. With Shu, I kind of just doodled a bunch, and we kind of found a happy medium that we wanted to go for. I think the big thing when we were starting was, you know, someone, she's kind of the character who does everything herself. She doesn't need help. And the only help she gets is from Buster. So just kind of making sure where it's, like, physically speaking and in a silhouette aspect, someone who's not, like, you know, not frail. Like, she does all the cooking. She does all the heavy lifting. So we kind of tried to focus on that with her. And a little bit tomboyish. And with Buster, I mean, I know Joe, like Joe, it's loosely based off of Joe's dog, Blackjack.
Oh.
Yeah. He was just like an overly enthusiastic dog, but yeah.
Now, I won't ask you, I didn't ask him a question. I want to ask you the same thing. How can a dog be cutting food on the cover? Because that's Joe's world, you know. He deals with those kinds of things. You get all kinds of wonderful stuff in there, and it's probably best not to wonder why, just to go and enjoy the good thing. So I wanted to ask you, Tamara, about later on in the book, when they get to the credits, there are different colors to the different panels. There's, like, for example, Joe's panel is red, and Wook Jin's is blue, and then the letterer's yellow, and then, let's see, what color is yours? I can't find it right quickly, but anyway, everybody's got a different color to it. Was that to kind of break up the feel of the rest of the book? Why did you decide to do that?
Yeah, that part was actually specified in the script. I don't remember if I used the exact colors that he specified, but he wanted kind of like for that to kind of stand out for like each time someone was like given like a highlight to like make that a bold, like kind of solid color, or at least monochrome color for that panel.
Mm-hmm. Yours is green, by the way. I finally ended it down, so I want to make sure we get that. See, I'd love to know why these colors were chosen for these different people, but unfortunately that's probably not something you know at this point.
I'm not sure. Like I said, I may have just, I don't remember if I used the specific ones he did. I don't know if there was much thought, like, oh, Wu Jin's favorite color is blue or something, you know, like whatever color. I don't remember. I think it was just kind of like, well, this color is different from the other color.
Okay. Okay.
And
well,
it looks weird. Yeah.
Well, it gives, it stands out at the end. It's interesting. It's at the end of the book too, which I find really challenging. So let's go back to you, Wu Jin. Talk about I asked Joe a little bit about whether there was an anime feel to this, and he didn't seem to think there was. And as far as the art goes, I don't know. I kind of get a little sense of it, and I don't know, I don't want you to disagree with Joe or anything, but was there any style that you were kind of aiming for using when you created the art for Flavor?
Not necessarily. I think most of it is just what influences me as an illustrator. I do get certain influences from anime and manga. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I can cite one thing where I was like, this was definitely what I was going for. But I know, like, I'm a huge fan of Satoshi Kon, who did like Paprika and like Perfect Blue. So I mean, it's like little things like that and other influences probably just crept in, and it kind of just maybe turned that way. I don't know. Sorry.
Well, it's just it's what you like. They always say tell stories that you enjoy, and I think what's happening is you're drawing art that you enjoy, and that's why the things are the way they are in the book.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so that's good. Now, of course, now we got to talk with Tamara about that down that that same alley. As far as like choice of colors, was there a choice? Like, for example, she's wearing a green shirt. Shu is at the beginning, and of course, Buster has like a green, like a scarf going around his neck and things like that. Were there any real choices as far as why you colored things the way that you did?
Sure. I mean, even going to the anime thing, I know there was like, we were kind of going for like a Miyazaki feel. Mm-hmm. Not like you were trying to like specifically emulate it just like that, but like, I know for me that definitely influenced. I looked at a little bit of stuff just to get like a, you know, like an idea of color. But in those instances, probably, it's probably just that, especially in that first issue, it's like very kind of like earthy and like warm for the backgrounds. So like the green thing is going to stand out against that, like contrast against that.
Right.
That's probably in that specific case why I chose it.
Now, I noticed a lot of the time, as you're just saying, that there's like a warm, almost a gold or something like that kind of a feel to the time. When you get to the night is a lot bluer. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that, which makes it when you get to a different situation, you don't have to question where we are, which I really liked. I thought those were particularly well done things to help us, you know, it shouldn't be a roadblock, coloring should be. It should be help you do that. So I thought that your coloring really added to that and made things really stand out really nicely. You know, the different choices of colors, like for backgrounds and things like that, I thought went really well.
Yeah, I think that's something I definitely try to do with like either a different location or a different like time setting or something. I want to like, you can look at it and it's pretty clear, like this feels different than this other thing, even if you can't necessarily tell why always, but like just that this ties it together and like this feels like a distinct scene from this other thing.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to say later that evening, you know, the show is evening, but I don't have to do that with your stuff. You help the script in the sense that we don't have to have a lot of words, any more words in it. And I always think that's a real strong thing, especially for a colorist, because you can make things pop off the page real nicely and happen in such a good way. So I thought you did a real great job with that.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Now, Wook-jin, as far as the... I'm still kind of interested in characters and things like that. You know, I was fascinated by the dog and stuff. I thought that's who the dog really is, because Joe didn't mention that. But I always like to see, you know, realistic in that sense. And yet, you don't want too realistic. One of the things I do was talk with Ali about the food preparation and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work with him as far as, like, making food? You know, what's it like to make food for the different characters?
Yes and no. He gave us a lot of insight in terms of kind of how different things combine in different ways, mm-hmm. and create different, you know, elements and flavors to different types of food, and just the combinations and whatnot. As far as that, in terms of, like, influencing certain characters, a little bit, but not with each character. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you had some freedom to work with within the guidelines.
Oh, for sure. I think, as you'll see, as the issues keep going, there's chefs and cooks that show up with different specialties. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where it's like, we're getting a lot of background information from Ali, and he's just, you know, he's kind of blowing us away, just being like, oh, this can do this. And I know with Joe hearing that, it creates storytelling opportunities that we didn't think were possible. So instead of it just being like, oh, this is like a steak, Ali can be like, well, if we add this to the meat, it can change it into something else, and maybe that'll show up.
Because mm-hmm. I talked about the one sequence where peppers get thrown at and I don't want to get into details too much, but it was painful to look at that for me, what was going on. When you see what happens, and, you know, there's a little description as to what's going on and stuff like that, which it really hurt for me to look at those panels and stuff. So I thought you did a terrific job on that. That was great.
Oh, thank you.
And there's several other sequences. There's one I have to talk about, was the one where the dog is at the window. And yeah. I don't want to spoil too much, but he's got a wig on, and there's a, you know, all kinds of fun things. Made me laugh right out loud when I saw that. I thought that was a great sequence.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with the dog, and I think, you know, Joe's dog is awesome too. And, you know, dog is man's best friend, but... Mm-hmm. Buster is Shu's best friend, and it's not just because he's a dog, but also just because Buster always has her back. He's there helping her in the kitchen, and I like that idea of, you know, it's a dog, but it's also a fictional world, so it can, you know, he can cook in the kitchen, and technically he talks in his own language, mm-hmm. and Shu just kind of understands what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to ask you, Tamara, I don't know if you ever saw Underdog. It was a cartoon series called Underdog. There was a girl dog that was friends with Underdog. And then when I saw the coloring of the wig and the way it was placed on the dog's head, I immediately thought of her. And I have to say that was a fun look. That's what added to the humor of the moment, was to see that kind of that thing. Were you conscious of that when you were doing it, or was that just something out of the crevices of my head?
I have seen it, like, very randomly, like, as a kid, but I don't remember much about it. I don't remember that character, but that's funny.
Okay, well, anyway, that's what made me laugh a lot when I saw that, because I thought, oh, my gosh, it looks like Underdog's girlfriend for a second there. And it was just, thought that was great stuff, so as good things like that go. So as far as, like, moving forward with the books and things, are you going to be able to, like, Wook-jin, there are obviously doing, you're making things happen, as you have some freedom, as we talked about. Are there things that we can look forward to in the upcoming issues? Because this is an ongoing. That's the great thing about this book. It's not going to end until Joe gets to his conclusion, whenever that is.
Yeah.
Are there parts of the books that we can look forward to that are going to really be fun for us to see?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think as the issues go on, you know, it's somebody getting put into an uncomfortable situation, you know, like we all do from time to time. And it's how we grow out of those situations, and kind of like, you know, when you're put in a corner, you fight your way out. And literally, so there's, there'll be like a tournament. I hope that's not spoiling too much, which I don't think it is.
Well, it says in the stuff about it that it's a Game of Thrones, or no, it's a Hunger Games kind of setup. And so I kind of get a sense that, yeah, that's going to – when I mentioned that, I kind of figured that was what's going to happen, although we didn't specifically say that. But that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll build up. And Joe, we were talking the other day, and he actually mentioned kind of how he wanted – he had already like kind of had, you know, an ending in mind. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, yeah. And then knowing that, kind of being like how we work towards it, mm-hmm. is kind of fun. And there's a lot of possibilities between those points. So I'm excited, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. I just I think the big thing Joe and I talked about was kind of having the room to breathe with mm-hmm. the story. Mm-hmm. And you can tell, I hope it comes across in the first issue, where it's mm-hmm. like we're getting enough across, but not jamming it down your throat. Mm-hmm. And it's hopefully being able to slowly take it in and be able to feel like you're in that world, and then things will start to ramp up.
Well, the good thing is that's happening is we're getting to know these characters, and we're getting to understand the world. And I one of the things in the description I liked was the fact that chefs are celebrities in this world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Shu is involved, and obviously at one point she indicates that she cooks. And, you know, that's a very important thing in this world. And so for me, I liked it. I mentioned to him that I couldn't see the face of one of the soldiers in one mm-hmm. of the ones. And, you know, he said, well, that's just the way it is, because that's, you know, he does that kind of stuff. And it makes his books unique. You know, I have to be honest with you and stuff like that. So on the other hand, it's a challenge, though, isn't it, for you when you don't have expression? You kind of just have to do something level and flat on the where it would be.
I think it's more fun that way, because it's, you know, the guards are more of an ominous force, and then it puts the pressure on me to do more with body language than facial expressions, which, you know, like I said before, it's a fun challenge, and yeah, it's just different. Mm-hmm. I enjoy challenging myself.
How about you, Tamara, as far as like the color? Because you basically just have to lay down like a pink on there. It's interesting that it's a skin type color to me. I find that interesting. But there's a little like white border around part of it. I mean, was that intentional? Did they want you to do that? Or did you come up with the way that's colored?
On the soldiers?
Yeah.
Yeah, on most of the stuff, I mean, on you yourself, I kind of used Wu Jin's initial colors as a springboard, but okay. On most of the other stuff, I just kind of, and Buster as well. Mm-hmm. But on most of the other stuff, if there wasn't a pre-existing thing, and there's only like one or two pieces I think they had colored before I came on, like mm-hmm. promo stuff early on. Mm-hmm. So like the soldiers and a bunch of other things, I just kind of like laid that in, and for the most part, it was all fine, you know. But we like, if there's anything, we try to go back and forth and figure stuff out. But yeah, so I came up with their color.
Cool. Because, you know, that it's, I have to say, I mentioned to him about how it kind of was spooky that you can't see an expression, mm-hmm. you know, and I thought that, you know, he just kind of basically says, and of course, it's the way Joe does these good things. It's the way it is. And I like that about the book. Sometimes you can over explain what's going on and things like that. But I thought the nice use of color and the drawing of it, I thought really made them spooky in that level, that we don't know exactly who they are or what's going on with them. And then, of course, later on in the book, something happens that makes them even spookier, and I'll never spoil that, but it's just a really nicely done thing, taking what could be a two-dimensional thing and making it three-dimensional. I like the way you guys did that.
Thank you.
Okay, so now I guess the thing we can do is look forward to when this book is coming out. I know it's coming out in mid-May, and we gave that information a little earlier. As far as this being an ongoing, I guess we'll get to read your guys' stuff for quite a little while, we hope, that your artwork will continue to enchant us, and your colors will continue to grab our attention as far as flavor goes from Image.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So Flavor's coming out mid-May, but I would still go to your local store and tell them you want Flavor and make sure that they understand that's a comic and that it's a book that's going to be out and it's going to be great fun. I think it's going to be a lot of adventure, and I love adventure when I can find it in a comic. And I think your artwork really helps that just leap off the page to me and makes me look forward to issue number two. I got a chance to read one. But I think you guys are doing a wonderful job. I think this is going to be one of those books that will really grab people's attention and provide that variety that people like me always need. So, you know, Wookjin, I think you did great. And Tamara, you too. I think this is going to be one of those great books that people should pay attention to.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks again for having us.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another great interview. But until then, keep reading your comics.
It's over, Joker.
Over? Why, my dear delusional Dark Knight, it hasn't even begun.